Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for our next expectations show for the coming year for the 2026 season. Tonight, we're going to be looking at or talking about Dayton Wade and Nate Wiggins. Joining me to do that is Brad McGowan. Brad, how you doing?
Ken, I'm doing great. I've already started listening to your player preview podcast and thoroughly enjoying listening to those. So really happy to participate.
Love those shows. I mean, these are some of the most fun shows to do each year. I like it. It gives an opportunity to get cross-sectional opinions on position groups. We don't normally do that. You know, we have position group shows. We'll do one in camp and, you know, at the end of camp in particular to talk about where the Ravens are strength-wise. But if you want to get a number of opinions on a position group, you do these kind of shows, and we'll have an opportunity to talk about two position groups here, the wide receivers and the cornerbacks. And if it strays into some other things, that's fine too. But talking about a guy first who hasn't gotten a lot of playing time, still is short his first ever NFL target. I'm trying to think if he did was active for a game, but that's Dayton Wade. 2024 UDFA from Ole Miss, who has been kind of a camp darling the last 2 years and definitely a preseason darling, but hasn't been able to get on the field.
No, he hasn't. And he was with the team in 24, showed out in camp, flashed in the preseason, had a couple big plays. And then, you know, he didn't get on the field at all, even though the Ravens went through their share of veteran call-ups, traded for Deontay Johnson that year, brought in Steven Sims that year. And Wade never really seemed to crack through in the 24 season, despite some of the challenges that they had with the receiver position down the stretch that year.
Yeah, that obviously very frustrating. I think that's the biggest red flag on Dayton Wade's resume with the Ravens so far, is that he didn't get a chance in that 24 season. And Deontay Hardy, if everyone remembers, was the short stature wide receiver the Ravens had gotten to fill their return role and do some other good things for the 2024 season. He didn't do a damn thing for the Ravens. They elevated Anthony Miller. Gave him shots both as a punt returner and as a receiver. He had a couple catches, I think, if I recall. Steven Sims had one nice long run for the Ravens, if I recall correctly. Might have had a catch as well. And if I recall, did not do so well on some punts and let them go. And, of course, they traded for Deontay Johnson, which was it went as bad as anything can go in terms of
unmitigated disaster.
Wide receiver. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And so you have four fumble. You fumble the football four times from a front office perspective like that at the same position. And Dayton Wade has never got consideration in there. You have to kind of wonder what was going on in practice. Maybe he's fumbling the ball there.
If you could look back to his college career, I think his senior year at Ole Miss, he only had less than 500 yards or in that vicinity. It wasn't, when they brought him in as undrafted free agent, he wasn't the kind of productive college player that you thought, hey, this guy is going to, scrappy guy that's going to fight for it. He really hadn't produced very much in college. That being said, I guess it isn't common that an undrafted rookie comes in and makes a significant dent on offense his rookie year, unless they're a running back. So, maybe they just didn't feel he was ready. And then when you look at last season, he didn't have the preseason that he had in 24.
He definitely was not as good, no doubt about it. In 25, the preseason, he had a 29 quarterback rating throwing in the ball, and two of those balls were intercepted. But going back to his final year in college at Ole Miss, he was really terrific. He had 55 receptions for 830, 10.8 yards per target, and 6.9 yak per reception. Nothing wrong with pretty much anything he did. And he didn't do it with a super short A dot. There were some shorter gadget plays that he was involved in. But, 11.7 A dot is longer than what, say, Flowers had last year, for example. So, there were a lot of good things there in his final year in college. And he was in the SEC. I think you could say a little bit of an older player because it was fifth year in college. And if I recall correctly, Dayton Wade is about to turn 25, or maybe he already has. But It'll be 26 in September.
Yeah, I think it'll be 26. I apologize. For some reason, when I was looking up his stats, I had written the wrong thing down for a senior season. 830, that is a solid senior season. Nothing to dismiss out of hand. It was interesting when you offered the pairings, and as I was prepping for Wade, I was really thinking, given the way that we've talked about him thus far, what really would a significant season look like for him this year? And, would there be a role for him to contribute offensively? And, as I was digging in and started thinking about it, I think the Ravens clearly have, to this point, a top five in the wide receiver room. You have Flowers mm-hmm. and Bateman. You have the two rookies, Lane and Surratt. And then you have Tez Walker, who we're all very excited about. And then last year you have LaJonte Wester, who they drafted in the sixth round. And when you compare Wester and his physical build and his skill set to Wade, they're pretty similar in size and stature. Wade is a bit bigger and more sturdy. And I think some of what he's shown in the preseason in 24 as a route runner working out of the slot actually has looked a bit better than what Wester has showed offensively thus far. So, as I dug in a little more, it's not really that far outside of the realm of possibility if there's an injury in camp or, frankly, Wade does have a chance to beat out Wester. I don't think it's likely, but I wouldn't certainly write it off. And so he is someone that does have potential to contribute this season, potentially offensively.
Well, they're both second-year players. I think you can start there. So there's no sand in the hourglass argument for giving the job to Wester over Wade just for that reason. But Wester does have a lot more as a return man that he displayed in camp in 25 than Wade did in his two preseasons. So while I think that it's not unreasonable, he's got an $885,000 contract. It's a league minimum, and there's no guarantees with it. And it's structured that way for a reason. And there is a sand in the hourglass reason why you take Wester over Wade is that Wester signed for 4 years, and Wade is only signed through 3 years as an ERFA. They can get him next year at the league minimum, but then the fourth year they'd have to pay RFA money. It's not a big difference, but it's a difference. So you wouldn't probably cut Wester for Wade, all things equal. You'd keep Wester. But that's his big chance. I would, if that's the point you're making, is that if Wester has to get hurt, then that's it. That really is his big chance to make the roster. If they had someone else get hurt from their receiving room, I think they'd start looking at veteran receivers who could really help them catching the ball. Probably bigger players, maybe some smaller players also, but somebody they really had trust in being able to catch the football.
Entirely, entirely true. And I think Wester certainly has the inside track to the roster as the return man. And probably presents more upside. I was just, the other thing that I was curious about is what scheme or like, how are they going to structure the offense this year? I think on several of the podcasts that you've had, whether it's talking to Boss or some of the other, these preview pods, folks have talked a lot about 11 personnel, mm-hmm. But we frankly don't really know yet what Doyle is really going to want to run. And I think across the league, we've seen over the last 2 years, some of these teams model the Ravens penchant in going heavier and running a lot of 12 personnel. That being said, the Ravens, they've obviously lost Ricard. And, when you look at the tight end room, I just listened to the preview pod you did on Cuevas. In reality, outside of Andrews, they don't really have, they're relying on two late drafted rookies and a mm-hmm. journeyman in the tight end room. So, as I was thinking about how they would structure the pass catchers, if they did want to run a lot of 11 personnel, they could favor wide receivers in a way that they haven't previously, just given the experience that they have in the tight end room.
So you're saying run some 10 or run more 11 as a
correct
in within in the blend. I mean, I agree that's possible. They'd have a half an extra. Okay, so in one sense, they have an extra eligible receiver per play if Ricard was playing half the snaps before, let's say. But they could have more than that if also Declan Doyle wants to run more 11 personnel anyway. So you could see an even bigger uptick than that. Or you could see that the Ravens get back to their roots. And if they have a really dominant year, that they become a running team again and that they use more of a tight end in the backfield situation. You know, the one that hasn't been talked about much is six offensive linemen. And the Buffalo Bills, you know, play that 16 times per game or something. Well, the Ravens have now a potentially good six offensive lineman, Emory Jones, who could be pretty useful in that regard, maybe. So, you know, I think the truth of the matter is I want to be surprised by the thing. First of all, because it's fun. But second of all, because I don't want to take for granted what I think it might be. Yeah, I think there's a good chance they run more 11 because, hey, you take a fullback out of the equation, it almost forces that. Is there a chance for more pony backfield? Sure. Chance for more 12 and 13? Sure. Is it heavily influenced by how the Ravens are game scripting on a week-to-week basis? Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that can have a big difference. It has an even greater difference, I would say, on defense, where you can end up playing a ton more dime if you have a really dominant team that's beating the crap out of opponents week after week.
Yeah, I think the reason I'm sort of going down this thought process is, you know, is prepping and wanting to give Wade, what are the legitimate circumstances under which he might make this team and potentially mm-hmm. contribute? And, you know, frankly, this is, I think you said this on one of the last pods we did together about this is like anticipating opening presents on Christmas this year in the off season, because we don't actually know some of the schemes they're going to roll out both on offense and defense. So it's far more exciting from that perspective than we've had in Ravens off seasons past. But, you know, that being said, for all of the reasons we've discussed, I do think it'll be challenging for him to make the roster and contribute. He's got a clean slate, like many of these other receivers out there that this coaching staff isn't tethered to, and you know he'll have to make the most of it in camp if he wants a shot.
All right, let's get right to it and talk about what makes up a good season for Dayton Wade this year. What's your good season look like?
So for me, I put that a good season for him in camp, he shows enough that he makes the roster decision on the six wide receiver spot, at least a conversation through a strong preseason. You know, I think he'd probably need to show some in the return game in order to make that a real conversation. One thing I put here is that he forces the Ravens to consider whether or not they want to keep seven wide receivers. The last time I remember them doing this was in 2014 when they had Deontay Thompson and Kamar Aiken, two other undrafted guys that were battling for the last spot, and they ended up keeping both of them. I don't think they've done it since then, but you know, given they are lighter at fullback and tight end, perhaps there's a chance. But regardless of whether he makes the roster out of camp, I think if he is one of the priority practice squad guys that is potentially a next man up, if there's an injury, then I think for him, that is a good season. And I also put that he gets called up for the active roster, you know, maybe a couple times throughout the season and contributes on special teams. I would consider that a good season. That might be bordering on great, considering that we don't think, you know, he's likely to make the team coming out of camp.
Yeah, he has not yet played any NFL games. So basically that opportunity is going to have to almost come from injury. I don't think there's a chance to keep seven wide receivers. The problem is this, that if they did, it would mean they're keeping both Wester and Wade, unless there's another dark horse is going to show up and win the job, like a veteran wide receiver is coming in and Wade suddenly becomes the return man. I guess that would be possible if Wester got hurt that way. But I don't think there's room for both Wester and Wade on the roster. They're too similar in what they bring in terms of strengths too similar in terms of stature, and I just don't see a place for both of them on the roster. I think it's one or the other. So my good season is healthy through camp to maximize live fire play, shows enough on kickoff return, punt returns to be top of the practice squad option there, and close to that as a wide receiver gadget player. So he'd have to probably show something in the preseason where he has a lot of elusiveness on gadget plays, and Doyle thinks, you know what, this is a way to force the defense to defend more of the field and not have to use Zay Flowers to force it to happen. So, you know, you have to get Zay downfield and get use him as a gadget guy. And I said the same thing, elevated for two or more games due to a Wester injury. So I think we're very similar on the good season. So I definitely don't think there's a 40% chance of him making the team. So I can't have a good season where he's making the team.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, I think. Yeah, that makes sense. Sorry, I was looking at what I had written, and I was thinking making the active roster as if getting, as in he gets called up a couple times. Right.
No, that's okay. That's what I thought I heard you say. So yeah. Let's move on to a great season. What is a great season?
So for great, I put that he makes the roster over Wester or because there is an injury. You know, I do want to caveat. I do think if there is an injury that hampers their depth, they're going to bring someone in. That being said, you know, if he has a shot and he shows out and he makes the, you know, making the active roster, I think that would be great for him. And then I put gets game day activations to play on special teams, and he plays a handful of snaps on offense in a rotational role.
Okay, very similar. I'd say great season, which would be bad for the Ravens, is Wester is injured and the Ravens turn to Wade, who provides spark to the return game and a few offensive snaps. At higher than the 80th percentile. I mean, I don't think there's a 20% chance of this occurring. His ability to use and create misdirection works well with the other offensive assets that the Ravens have, Lamar, Henry, new schemes, et cetera. Some of the things that actually Ricard helped bring to this team with the, you know, his own, you know, direction, the follow Ricard rule actually created misdirection in its own way. So, if he were to have a great season, then the Ravens would have further options with him for 27 and 28. As it stands right now, I get the impression this is his last chance with the Ravens at age 26. There's not a lot of upside left for Dayton Wade. And, you know, I was one of the people kind of banging the drum for him a couple of years ago. And I just could not get my head around why they might have left him out in the chance they seem to have for a parade of really unimpressive veteran receivers they brought through.
Yeah. I know that during the latter stages of the Harbaugh era, we often were curious as to the players they elevated and the special teams only players, but you know, if it's a special team need, he would seem like the kind of guy that could have gotten called up, and frankly, he didn't.
Well, he could have gotten called up for a return man role, because that's a very important special teams role where he doesn't have any hope of getting called up covering kicks. I mean, that's just
right.
He wouldn't be good enough at it to be the guy that they selected for that.
Right. That situation. Right. Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Nate Wiggins. And obviously, he's the headliner in this, so we're moving up from the undercard here. But did not really progress as significantly as hoped in year two. I think he fell a little short of what I would have hoped would be even a good season for him. Wasn't terrible, but in 2024, let's review, he allowed 7.0 yards per target, had 7.8 snaps per target, one interception, no touchdown, 64.6 opposition passer rating. And the really big down for him was either 10 or 11 penalties, depending on who you believe on this number. So I think PFF has 11 penalties right now for him, a year ago. Then in 2025, 6.4 yards per target, which, by the way, that shocked me that number was lower, because it seems like he's a lot of times he was getting beat deep and in the wrong place. 6.8 snaps per target is targets were way up. Okay, so that was an issue. And obviously he's playing full time and he's also doing some traveling, but three interceptions, two TDs, a 73 opposing pass rating, perfectly good, and five penalties was a significant improvement. So while the year wasn't great, it wasn't a step backwards in some way. And it just, it's more like the improvement was not what we hoped it would be.
That was the first thing I wrote down when I started prepping my notes, is that he didn't show the progression in year two that we had anticipated. And I think coming out of his rookie season, especially the flashes he showed early, I thought the sky is the limit for this guy in 2025. And, you know, candidly, the entire pass defense really struggled last year, and the secondary was challenged throughout. And outside probably of, Kyle Hamilton, who is going to look excellent probably regardless of what happens around him, and I guess Awuzie showed pretty well, you know, the rest of the players in the secondary really struggled, and Wiggins, you know, took his share of that as well. You know, there's been some things that have come out this offseason. I think you've mentioned this, but, you know, Rod Woodson was on the Ravens Vault podcast talking about the technique that the Ravens played in the secondary. And he talked about it specifically as it related to Marlon Humphrey, this idea of this low hip trail technique that he felt was really not fitting of the defense that they were trying to play. And so that just, when I heard that, it just kind of, you know, made me question what exactly the team was trying to do defensively last year and how much of an impact that had on some of these guys that we thought would show a lot better than they did last year. And so, you know, all of that goes into, okay, well, what are we actually expecting of Nate Wiggins as he goes into this 2026 season? I was looking through the roster. Wiggins is still the second youngest cornerback on the roster. Only Chandler Rivers is younger than him, and that's by 6 weeks younger. He's born in October, and Wiggins is born in August. He will turn 23 in August. He's still got so much in front of him. And so, you know, one of the things I was thinking about as we were prepping for this is, if you were to ask me who is a young player that could ascend the highest this season because of coaching and talent, Wiggins is probably the person I would bet above anyone else on their roster that could make the biggest leap this year because of the combination of ability, scheme fit, and coaching as we go into this season. So I'm really excited about his potential. But, you know, again, you know, let's
talk about that for a second. Because in addition to Wiggins, on the defense alone, I'm certainly hoping for a big step up from Starks, who didn't have a terrible rookie year, but he certainly wasn't worth the first round draft pick based on that rookie season. I'm hoping for a big step up from Mike Green. And maybe if you put my feet to the fire on Mike Green or Starks having a bigger step forward than Wiggins is already kind of good where he is, and he's taking on some responsibility this last year. You know, that'd be another one. I wouldn't say a player like Buchanan, but it's possible a player like Buchanan would take a bigger step forward. There are a few different players who I think could on this defense. And then there's a bunch of guys who are 10th year veterans, five different guys are 10th year or later. This is it's a barbelled age spectrum the Ravens are dealing right now. And the only guy really in the middle of all this is Kyle Hamilton. And he's the best player by far. But the other, the
you know, they have still pretty young also, isn't he just 24 or 25?
Oh, let's figure. I mean, he's super young, that means, but we'll check this out right now. Hamilton is 25 now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, while you're, you know, I totally agree. I was thinking about Starks and Green as others that I would bet my money. And I was thinking about it.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
I was thinking about it from the perspective of the guy that has the chance to really move himself into the top echelon of players at his position. We're talking like, you know, top handful of cover corners. So that's really how I was thinking about this. Like, he has the guy to me that has the biggest opportunity to take the leap at and become like a real guy. Not that I think those other guys won't, but anyway.
Well, let's keep going. What else is there to say about the penalties we talked about? He cut his penalties from 11 to 5. The 5 penalties in year 2 were 3 DPIs and illegal contact and defensive holding. So they were all the big kind. He didn't have any kind of offsides creeping up at the line of scrimmage or anything like that. They're all first down penalties. He had 14 passes defense, which on the surface is good because it was one more than he had in 24. Did a good job of catching the football, by the way, this last year with 3 picks. But it's really a 30% decline in terms of plays on the football per target. So he's targeted a lot more, and his percentage of times he made a play on the football went from 19.7% of targets to 13.7. So, not ideal. But, there's plenty of good to pick out of the season. I really do like the fact that he supposedly is the one who stepped up and asked for more responsibility in terms of traveling.
Yeah, he certainly has the mentality of a number one corner where he wants the tough assignments. He's the kind of player that seems to have that mentality. If he gets beat, he's coming back the next play and he's going to make a play. Something that I'm curious about is how Minter will deploy the defensive backs this year. I think I was doing some, we've talked, you've talked a lot about the Ravens' unwillingness to have cornerbacks travel. And I was trying to dig in and figure out, is that something that the league does as much as they used to? And, I had heard someone say this on an NFL podcast this year, and I can't remember who it was. So I apologize if you happen to be listening to this, but talking about how with the new zone match schemes and the deception that a lot of the new defensive coordinators in the McDonald tree of thought are, it is a lot more challenging to have one corner that is traveling because it changes all of the assignments for the defense as they rotate. And it also, in a lot of ways, gives away what you want to do. And pre-snap deception is so important in these zone match schemes. And so I suspect that they won't do a lot of that. Minter's defenses in Los Angeles the last 2 years were some of the highest zone coverage defensive schemes out there. In fact, in 24, they were the highest by True Media. And so I anticipate they'll bring a lot of that, those principles back. And so I imagine they will have Wiggins line up on the strong side of the field in order to have the protection of Hamilton or whoever the slot corner is against
them. That makes sense.
And now anymore offensively, the number one receiver isn't usually the X receiver on the left side of the on the boundary side of the offense.
Meaning it doesn't have to be.
Correct. Yes. And a lot of the newer offenses are taking their number one receivers and putting them in motion or putting them in the slot. And so, you don't have your Deion Sanders up against Jerry Rice, X receiver, number one corner on the left side of the field, the way that you used to in the past. And so, I think we'll see Wiggins a lot more on the left side of the defense, right side of the offense, and really hoping to lock down that position. And I would really like to see offenses steer away from him like they did in 24.
Well, it would, if that would work, I'd be all for it. I think that'd be a lot of fun. There, I mean, there's another corner who needs help, and that's Humphrey potentially, who could also benefit from having Hamilton on the same side. So you got to think about those kind of things. It's just not clear to me exactly how they're going to play it. Another Christmas present opening thing. So we'll see how it is. But there are three things. Oh, let's talk about two other things first. The missed tackle rate went way down this last year, down to 11.8%. And that's above average for a corner. Average for corners is 13 and change, I believe, might even be 14. Triggers very well downhill, which helps him get to the player more and make that tackle. The whole team had a lot of missed tackles last year, so it wasn't like he came away completely clean, but that's a good number for a corner in today's NFL. What he doesn't do
and is especially rush. a corner with his size and build.
Yeah, twiggy build. That's true. And you typically get something in return for that. In his case, you definitely get speed. Also, the other component of it was in cutting his penalties is an indication that he's getting a little bit more secure at the top of the stem. He's probably making better reads off the opposing wide receiver in terms of what he's doing, but he's also trusting his makeup speed the way he did in college. And he never got penalized back in Clemson. I mean, I might have had one in his final season. And, you know, that's just someone who really trusts their makeup speed. They're just daring you to try and run by them. Right. And he's in the NFL level, he adjusted to it. He had a lot of penalties his first year, and then he cut them way down. And that's good news.
Yeah, before you make the comment about the blitzing, when I was thinking of him being on the same side as Hamilton, I was thinking of Hamilton's ability to help in the run defense so he doesn't have to trigger downhill in the same way that they can sort of protect him from sticking his nose in there. But he has been a willing tackler. I've been pretty impressed with the way that he triggers and fills the run there.
Yeah, and even, I mean, he'll still have to make tackles even with Hamilton on the side of the field, but Hamilton takes away the strong side of the football as a horizontal defender by just knifing through traffic, and he doesn't always make the tackle himself. He can. He makes a lot of tackles, but he also forces runners into space that they might not otherwise go to, and that's where he can get some good cleanup help from a player like Wiggins. What Hamilton gives you is just so much in terms of this. Yeah. We'll have the Hamilton show coming up. So he rushed the quarterback only twice last season, only once as a rookie. I swear I thought it was more than that because one of the things was that he had two pass rush events even. In any case, PFF's got him for three times rushing the passer over two seasons. Not a guy you want to waste his really positive attribute by taking him off coverage duty. Do you see that ever really changing his career? Do you think he's going to be like Deion Sanders, where he basically you never take him out of coverage?
I mean, I would lean the latter. He just, the upside to me that he presents as a coverage player with his gift of length and speed is far less common than guys you can put out there to be versatile. So, but who knows? Maybe he'll put on last year. I think he came into camp and he had put on 10 pounds of muscle. And I haven't heard this year if he's continuing to try and fill out again. Like he turns 20. What did we say? He turns 23 in August. So he's still, you've talked a lot about some of the older rookies that the team has. He's still not even man strength yet,
So in theory, there's still some development there. And there's certainly some additional learning that'll happen at the NFL level. Any reason why he would not be a cornerstone player for the Ravens at this point? Like if you had to put a percentage chance on it right now that the Ravens could come after year three, in fact, where they sign him up for the fifth year option and they sign him, also extend him at that point.
Yeah, I think, we're not yet getting to the good and great. I think there's still some more ground to cover. But for me, like one of the things I mentioned in the great season is that he's a no doubt fifth year option guy that is on the table, that he's on the table for an extension this offseason. I think given the premium that the role, the premium top one, number one cornerbacks are, the age of Humphrey, the way that the contracts are staggered with Hamilton having signed his deal last season, I think, you know, I would say probably 60, barring injury, 60 to 70% chance that he becomes a cornerstone player.
Okay. And it doesn't mean necessarily next year, but at some point. And I'd say that's right about where I would put it. Three quarters.
Right. Two-thirds, I mean, maybe. You know, something that I alluded to this, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts a little bit in more detail, but, you know, we are expecting the defensive backs to look, I mean, hopefully they're going to look a lot better, but, you know, talking about some of the coaching changes that they've made and what, now I'm forgetting the defensive backs coach that they brought in that has been so successful previously, but, you know, I'm just really, really excited to see what some of these younger guys look like under this new scheme, and really hopeful that they take a leap. And, you know, again, like, if, you know, with the tools Wiggins has, the sky is really the limit for him. Like, I, you know, given his physical ability, there's no reason why he couldn't be one of the top handful of cover corners in the league at some point in the, you know, next couple of years.
I agree. And, you know, even in a year where he wasn't perfect by any stretch, PFF has different coverage grades for man and zone. And he had a terrible zone grade, like right near the bottom with Humphrey. They're both like in the bottom six or seven of the whole league. And Humphrey's overall was one of the worst in the league. But Wiggins had a fantastic man coverage score. And that comes with some traveling to cover some outstanding receivers. So I think there's a lot to look there, to like there. I want to look forward to 2026 because there's three things I want to see, or three things I want are potential areas for improvement here. The first is to clean up some of the top of stem grabbiness that still exists. Still had five penalties this last year. Could he cut that further? And there's enough there that he can cut it further. It's a question of will he? Could actually some of the help from that could come from the pass rush. But the second one is all about the pass rush. It's more opportunistic play with a better pass rush. So that means finding the football in the air. There's going to be more balls thrown probably off target because of a pass rush that is more effective. There's definitely going to be more rushed throws. So anyway, I want to see some. I'm leaving out any possibility the pass rush could actually be worse this year. I think that's so unlikely at this point.
Frustrated. Yeah, I get through your list. Let's come back to the pass rush.
And so the traveling is the last thing. Is do they continue doing it or not? I agree with your point that there's a lot of advantages towards staying on one side of the field. And you know, you mentioned some of them, but part of it is in zone defense, you also want people to know how their handoffs work kind of intuitively and from a muscle memory perspective. So you've got that additionally beyond the moving players around. In theory, players should be able to move and still understand where their handoff is. But I don't think it's always that easy. And so, we'll see how they decide to attack this. And I'm looking forward to seeing it.
I totally agree with that. The one thing that I wanted to dig in a little bit more on that I had put in my notes and forgot to mention, and glad you brought it up, is in addition to the boost we think the new coaching staff and scheme will bring to the secondary, an improved pass rush is going to hopefully yield tremendous dividends. You know, they've brought in Hendrickson. To your point, the one of the other top players I considered for making a significant leap is Mike Green. Really excited that they signed Travis Jones to that deal that they signed him for. And then, you know, who knows with Matt Abike? I think I'm hopeful, but I think, you know, reading the tea leaves, this is the kind of injury that, you know, he can feel great. It just is whether or not he can withstand the contact of an NFL game in and game out. But all that being said, you know, they're going to have a lot more resources to throw at the pass rush. And that should pay dividends in the secondary and reduce the time that these players have to cover from what they were going through last season when That was probably the one of the worst pass rush seasons I can remember as a Ravens fan in the last many years.
It was utterly terrible. And, you know, to finish first in the league, second in the league, and then wherever the hell they finished in the league in terms of sacks this last year, and, you know, be so off it in terms of additional time putting their corners under the microscope was a difficult thing. Here's a good maybe thought experiment for you. Is you've got now two guys who can play three tech. In theory, you got more than that. I mean, I'm not even including Rashawn Benny in this. But give me the percentage chance that you think Matabike has a better season than Calais Campbell this year. And Campbell is 40, but he's coming off a 6.5 sack season. Nnamdi is whatever he is, 27, 28 years old, whatever he is still, but coming off of a season that he lost almost entirely to injury.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is tough because you have the ageless wonder in Calais Campbell who just defies, you know, he's the Derrick Henry of defensive linemen right now. I would say if it weren't for uncertainty about whether or not Matabike can play, if we were confident that he was going to come back and play, I would put his chance of having a more significant season much, much higher than Campbell, just because I think he will get so many more opportunities.
You're already cheating because you're not making
I think I'm very nervous. I'm very nervous that Matabike ultimately has something like what Zach Orr dealt with. That being said, I'm going to be optimistic and I'm going to root for what I want and put my money where my mouth is. And so I'm going to give Matabike the 75% chance to have.
Oh, 75% chance. I'm definitely on the other side of that one. Yeah. If you'd have said 55, you'd have been in my range. Mm-hmm. I think that the actual thing might be 50, 45. I'm not sure. I think Campbell actually at age 40 is probably likely to have a better season, more likely just than not to have a better season.
Because of the injury concern, the Matabike injury concern, you think?
Well, the injury concern is not insubstantial, but if you look at Matabike's last season, I think he had that he played a fair amount. He had four roughing the passer penalties, and what did he do? Okay, let's look at him as a pass rusher. I don't know what his sack total actually was.
The reason I was higher is I just think he will, if he comes back and plays, and the neck isn't the concern, he will be the force that drives everything else, and they will use him. They'll scheme to get him he'll get the under on the stunts that he can split through, and mm-hmm. he'll be the one that generates a lot of that they'll use to generate a lot of the initial pressures. And I think they will rely on him in that capacity. And for that reason, I think that would be more impactful, even if he doesn't have the counting stats.
But he'll have all the one-on-one options. He should, with Travis Jones on the field with him. I mean, if they leave Travis Jones undoubled,
If those three guys can play this season and play at the level we know they're capable of, that would be that'll be amazing to watch.
All right, let's move on. Talk about a good year. What does it look like for
Wiggins? Yes, all right,
yes.
So I put for a good year, he solidifies his role as the clear number one cover corner in the Ravens secondary. He benefits from improved defensive scheme and pressure to ascend to the top quarter of coverage cornerbacks in the league. And overall, the pass defense takes a big improvement as top third in the league.
Okay. Very similar again. I'd say he remains the unquestioned number one cornerback for the Ravens, who plays every down when healthy and 15 plus games. Both of those have to be true for it to be a 60th percentile result. Rarely allows a TD or a big yak play, and I'm going to go with two or fewer TDs allowed. He allowed two last year, zero as a rookie, so I think that's probably pretty reasonable. His yards per target improves, and his OPR continues at a high level. Somewhere right in the range he's been, right around 70, opposing OPR would be fine. Better would be great. And then he's recognized as one of the top 8 to 10 cornerbacks in the league. That would certainly put him in the top quartile. It'd actually probably be higher than that.
Yeah.
All right. Great year.
So for great, I said he makes his case as an ascending top end cover corner, challenges for a Pro Bowl berth. I said he makes the Ravens' fifth year option obvious, but becomes a no brainer extension candidate. And What I didn't put down, but I want to add here is I want to see him improve on his sort of turnover hunting. I think from his first season to his second season, last year it looked like he was looking for the interception more and looking to make plays more than he did his rookie year when he was just trying to get his hands on the ball and not converting. I'd like to see him actually be more aggressive in that department and convert more of his opportunities into takeaways. I'm not going to put a number on takeaways, but you know, I'd just like to see that instead of being content with just knocking the ball away, like wanting to improve his playmaking.
I mean, that's certainly not unreasonable. I'll go with my great season here. Plays as needed most within Minter's scheme, whether that means as a full-time left corner, right corner, or a role as a traveling with top opposing receivers. His presence helps, along with the play from Awuzie or another, the Ravens, to deploy Humphrey as most needed, whether that's outside, slot corner, or even safety, including rest. So if he plays well and Awuzie has a season that's like last year, Awuzie was the best corner the Ravens had last year, then Humphrey can actually play a rotational role. He could play less snaps. He and Awuzie could split the snaps somehow that are non-Wiggins snaps. You know, they could use a different guy even to play the slot if that's what they wanted to do. And then I think you want to have that flexibility even if you don't use it, just in case either of these 30-year-old guys doesn't work out this year. And that's right. certainly possible. Ball production and penalty avoidance improved to Pro Bowl level, whether or not he actually receives the honor. Okay, so he's got to be in thought of in that way, at least by Ravens fans. If he doesn't get it somehow, we'll talk about how he gets screwed. I'm okay with that if that's right. If we're right about it anyway. And his sticky play forces lots of overthrows and balls thrown away from stat-conscious QBs. This is I want that shroud of fear that Ed Reed used to create over his part of the field that Earl Thomas at once created. I want other quarterbacks to be afraid to throw at him. They weren't last year. They threw at him like he was a guy they could pick on. And right. He actually had 102 targets this last year, and that's got to improve.
Right. Yeah. I think we're pretty aligned there. I think I'm just really excited to see what he looks like this year after taking some lumps last year. What's he been working on in the lab? How does he come into camp? How does he adapt to this new scheme? It's going to be fun to see.
Yeah. All right, Brad, great talking football with you as always. Tell folks where they can contact you if they have a question about football and want to talk online.
Sure. I'm on X at MC Bradley.
McBradley. There you have it. And Brad last year was on the show One Last Thing. As a part-time
split the role there.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll have something with some shows we'll have him on for this year that we'll figure out as we move forward.
Ken's getting so popular these days, got Reddit commenters, got a stable of analysts. I just got to get in where I fit in,
Don't worry. We won't lose track of our most reliable people to have on the show. That's for sure, Brad. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a pod, hit me up. We're getting to the heart of the off season here, where the Ravens are going to take some time off after some off season OTA activities, including tomorrow when I'm headed out for the first one. Really excited about that. We're recording this on Monday night, so it'll be Tuesday the 19th. The Ravens will be hosting open practice. Looking forward to that, but I also want to hear from you. If you'd like to be on a short and have an idea, something you're passionate about, hit me up and we'll get you on. There's one guy who sent some tweets today about improvements to the schedule scoring systems. And by the way, some excellent thoughts in there about using some weightings that are scaled for the playoff significance rather than trying to fit it into a subjective adjustment that I think make a lot of sense. I have to ponder how to do that, but it's definitely advice I want to take. And if you have a statistical thing, I'm always interested in hearing that, of course. Brad, thanks again for joining me.
Thanks, Ken. Just a reminder, bring a lot of sunscreen tomorrow. It's going to be a hot one.
Ugh, yeah. And I'll talk to you later on Film Study.